Welcome back, everybody. Episode 4 here of the MGM Show. Thank you to everybody who has listened and tuned in and written in and reached out and given feedback and given critiques and all of the above. With this episode, Evan, I think we're going to take a completely different direction than the first three.
Yeah, exciting.
But it is solely because we have gotten great feedback. I think positive feedback, but also, again, some critiques on, hey, Evan, hey, CJ, you are using language that us lay people do not know. We do not understand. Can you help us out? So today's episode is simply going to be the ABCs of MGM. We are going to run through, for lack of a better term, a glossary of terms that we use on a day-to-day basis that we have ingrained in our coaching sessions and company that we obviously know very well, but for the average Joe, it's completely new.
I just got out of lunch with someone who is actually pretty aware of cognitive theory and knows Kathy Colby, and I thought that that gave me permission to just go deep in that conversation, and he was like, okay.
Lost.
Yeah, you can back that up. Tell me what initiating quick start is again, and I was like, yeah, well, that's your daughter. I was like, you know, you gotta know these things. So I think it's completely necessary, and, you know, constructive criticism is a great thing. I like constructive criticism from wise people, and our audience is full of wise people. So I think we did a great job of breaking this down. Pat ourselves on the back. But I think we really did do a good job. What we're going to do today is, as Carl said, we're going to break down terms that you're going to hear regularly used together, the three areas of the mind, the way to allocate time, the sink and strain, the
internal methodologies, and external self-validation.
All of it. So we're going to break it down. Some of this is going to get a little bit boring. Which is not what we are all about here. But we want to have this episode published for you guys so that you can come back and refer to it as you need it. Or if there's something that intrigues you, something that sparks a thought process and you're not sure, you know, what's the difference between conflict and burnout or burnout and tension? Come back to this one. You know, come back to it. We are going to have all of these definitions posted in the episode description. It's just a good base for you to come back and take a look at. So without further ado, we're going to dive into this. And the first three definitions you've heard us talk about, you've heard us discuss the three different areas of your mind. Let us give you those definitions now. So why don't you kick us off, Siege?
Alrighty, so getting started here, three areas of the mind. We have got the cognitive part of your mind. The cognitive part of your mind has been known for centuries as one of the three parts of the mind that deals with knowledge, competencies, and intellectual process as measured on IQ or skills test. So to put it into an example, think being tested in high school, tested in college, or what you have written on your resume as a professional.
Absolutely. So now we have the affective, which is commonly measured for, and it is known for centuries as one of the three parts of the mind as well. It pertains to or arises from feelings or emotions and is measured on personality or social style instruments, an emotion or a tendency, something that can influence somebody.
Rounding out the third part of your mind is the cognitive part of your mind, which is where Evan and I live with our coaching. Known for centuries as one of the three parts of the mind and the action derived from instinct. It's purposeful, right? There's a mode of striving and volition. There's only one way that this can be measured, and it is through the cognitive A index.
And those three areas will be mentioned in every podcast that we do, whether it's with a guest, whether it's in theory, whether it's just in, you know, us shooting the breeze. Those three areas of the mind are critical for our listeners to understand. So the quick summary, and then we'll move on to allocation of time. You have cognitive thoughts and intelligence and IQ and all of the things that come with that area of the mind stored that are activated by affective emotions, how you feel about the task, problem, situation, person that you're having a conversation with at hand. But before you have an affective emotion and a cognitive thought, you have a conative instinct. And so conative is the area of the mind that is measurable, and most people don't understand until we enlighten them with it that you can understand what your instincts are and how that affects everything else. So we love the three areas of the mind. We'll talk about it a lot. Let's move on to the allocation of time now.
Yeah, that will not be the last time that you hear about the three areas of the mind. 100%. So allocation of time. Focus, buffer, and free time are things that we use in our coaching in order to get the most performance out of an individual or out of a team. So what are focus, buffer, free time definitions? We'll start with focus. This is time spent leading, producing, selling, anything that relates to the completing of the tasks that are required for your role.
So the difference now going to buffer time, and buffer time is defined as time spent preparing and learning. For many, this also includes mindless tasks such as clearing your inbox or catching up on some reading.
And finally, we've got free time, which is what you can all expect it, right? This is time spent relaxing, doing something fun, a hobby, hanging out with friends, family. It's non-work tasks that allows you to just totally declutter your mind and refresh.
And those three areas of the mind and those terms and definitions come to us from Dan Sullivan out of Strategic Coach. Dan is an early mentor of mine. Understanding focus, buffer, and free time has been part of my upbringing, my education, and my coaching with students, and now obviously, you know, with what we're doing in MGM for a long time. And I think that for that, it's important for people to understand when it is time to switch into those three modes, that they have to have a plan of action. So again, we'll have another episode for that. These are the definitions. And from there, we're going to take it into some more conative terms.
Exactly. So the next five terms that you're going to hear relate to how somebody ends up feeling and acting as it relates to their mental energy and reflective of their conative profiles. So starting with sync. This is spending your time and mental energy in the same way as your A result of your profile. So you've heard Evan and I talk about how I am a 3-7-6-3 and Evan is a 3-3-10-3. For us to be in sync, that means we need to be spending the majority of our time in our initiating action modes, which are follow through for me and quick start for Evan. Now, I know that's a lot, but it's an example of how somebody is in sync, and we will explain in a further episode down the line what exactly sync and strain is.
And that leads to the definition of strain. Strain is conative stress. So you've heard strain probably defined other ways in your life. All of us probably have an idea of what strain is, but when Carl and I are discussing strain in episodes, we're talking about it as conative stress. So it's a condition where a person's sense of how a task needs to be performed is sustainably different from his or her natural methods of problem solving. So to summarize those two, because I think it's important that you get that, we mentioned sync in the episode with Mike. We mentioned sync when we're talking about the three areas of the brain. When we talk about sync and strain, just to reiterate, it is about being in your conative action modes, your initiating conative action modes, or working outside those modes in your reactive zones or in your counteractive zones and finding a sense of mental energy, whether that's for the good or the bad.
So strain, right, is looking at you, how you do things, and how you end up doing them on a per task, per role basis. Conflict, the next definition, is how you end up working with somebody else. So conflict or conative conflict, which we will also call it, is another form of conative stress. However, this is conflict between two individuals. So technically, by definition, Evan and I are in conative conflict on our follow through and our quick start action modes because we have more than two numbers of separation between our profiles. So we look at conflict on an A to A basis, or rather a person to person basis.
Because conflict sometimes comes with a connotation of negativity. It doesn't have to. You and I are always going to be in cognitive conflict, but understanding each other's A's is the way that you avoid negative feelings. So just to kind of tie a couple of these definitions together, if CJ and I don't address the conflict between our cognitive action modes, our affective area of the mind, our emotional part of the mind, becomes very cantankerous very quickly. For example, this morning, CJ wanted to put a bunch of relationship agreements together for our clients. And I know that as an initiating follow-through, that is critical for him feeling good about what he was doing this morning, about producing in his role this morning. I am an initiating quick start, meaning for me, things are very improvisational. I will do those tasks when I feel they are relevant. There's no press from me. I don't have that internal feeling. So that's conflict. He's there. I'm there. I'm sitting on the couch listening to Stevie Ray Vaughan this morning, and CJ's putting together relationship agreements, begging me to just get up and take a look at it. And again, if I was not cognitively aware of his A profile, and I just continued to sit there and continued to, you know, float and do my morning my way, that can lead to an affective negativity. And instead, he's just like, listen, I got to get this done, and I respond to it.
I'm laughing right now because before you even brought up that scenario, I had in my head that I was going to bring it up if you did not. Because again, I'm sitting there this morning doing those relationship agreements, thinking to myself, I know this is putting Evan into, you know, strain.
Yeah.
And it is causing, again, we say conflict very, you know, not like we don't like each other, more just his natural instinct and his cognitive profile is completely different than mine. But again, as Evan mentioned, having that understanding allows us not to ever get to the point of, hey, I hate you, and hey, affectively,
yep,
I don't like you.
Or the way you do things.
Exactly.
I think, again, like, there's such a profound point in that, which is whether it's with your business partner, whether it's with your relationship partner, whether it's with your kids, whether it's with your subordinates, your coworkers, whoever it is.
Siblings, you name it.
You understanding someone's cognitive instincts allows you to tap into how they are wired to handle things. And that leads to emotional intelligence and emotional awareness that is beyond what the average person can comprehend. So without continuing on that, I think that, you know, today is a perfect example of that. And that was unscripted.
That completely unscripted. That could not have worked out any better. And honestly, conflict leads into tension perfectly, which is the next definition. So tension, again, a term of cognitive stress, but it's a condition where your manager or your boss has a view of how tasks need to be performed, and then you, as your individual person, has your cognitive profile of how you need to do things. And if there's a difference between how your manager views success in this role and the necessary instincts to be successful in this role and your cognitive profile, that is where tension rises.
And that, if not handled, is what leads to the final definition of this block, which is burnout. How many of you have said, I'm burnt out? And whether that's with your job, whether that's with your partner, whether that's with your kids, whatever it is, we've all used the term burnt out. The definition of burnout, when we are discussing it on this podcast, is what happens when you are constantly living in a state of strain. So you are going over time, becoming so far removed from your job or from your situation that you feel a need to leave. And we want to help people avoid burnout. That's, you know, the goal of this podcast is to enlighten you to recognize, am I in strain? Am I in tension? Or am I in burnout? And which of those three zones or which of those three modes can I either get back to or avoid getting to before something major has to happen or drastic has to happen.
So we'll move on to the next sort of batch of glossary terms here, and there's only two, but it's what Evan calls and what we have adopted with MGM now, external self-validation and internal self-validation. And there's no one on planet Earth who knows this better than Evan, so I'm going to let him take both definitions.
I appreciate it. So ESV and ISV, the acronyms of external and internal self-validation, are terms that I created when I was developing the process of College Confidence Coach. And so before, you know, I give you the exact definitions here, I want you to understand that ESV is a product of the process that all of us go through, and it happens at a young age. When you are thinking about major decisions in your life, where to go to school, what you should do for a career, who you should marry, you know, any major decision, you go to the people who you think know you well. You rely on the advice of people who you believe know you the best. And that can be your parents, your teachers, your spouse, your friends, even things that, you know, some of us believe by seeing in the media. And when you're validating your decisions by external forces, they're only being validated from an affective and, you know, at times a cognitive perspective. Oh, CJ, you're great at science. You should become a doctor, right? Or, you know, and we know that's not the case.
Thankfully, no one ever said that to me,
right?
Because I was never good at science.
But
good example, though.
If somebody told you that and they said, you know what, it's
my
just
parents,
this. Right.
If my parents told me that, I would have believed it.
Exactly.
And I would have gone through science.
So then at that point, you become externally self-validated as opposed to internal self-validation, which is right for you based on who you are. It combines the cognitive, the affective, and the cognitive abilities that you have. So there's only one way to begin your journey to internal self-validation, and that's by asking yourself the three critical questions. One, what do I really believe in? Two, who do I want to help? And three, what excites me about the future? And so you can apply those three questions to any major decision that you're making. And they obviously have different variations depending on that situation. But the definitions and the differences are external self-validation, when you're making decisions based on the advice of others, and internal self-validation when you're making decisions based on all three areas of your mind and your confidence within them.
Just moving forward for the sake of time here, we're going to move into Kathy Colby, right? Who she is, this theory that she has sort of theorized on and created, and then the three indexes that she has developed that we use as one tool, right? One small tool in our process, in our company, that allow us to measure for sync, strain, conflict, tension, all those things that we mentioned earlier. So I'm just going to run through these real quick. Kathy Colby is the theorist behind the cognitive theory. She's the founder of Colby Corp and the one that Evan and I are absolutely in love with. She's, you know, an 80-year-old woman and just salt of the earth, phenomenal. So Colby A Index, or cognitive A Index, which you've heard us mention several times now, is the instrument designed that quantifies what your cognitive mind is. So again, me being a 3763, Evan being a 3313. The Colby B Index, or the cognitive B Index, is the instrument that measures what you perceive as necessary and needed in the role in which you occupy. So for us as coaches, we end up looking at both profiles and getting an understanding of, are you in sync, are you in strain, and then getting you either into sync or out of strain. And then finally, the Colby C Index, or the cognitive C Index, which is how a manager, right, views success and the natural instincts necessary for the people that they are managing and leading to be successful in their roles. Anything you want to add to that, E?
No, I think that those definitions are strong, and it's not something that you as a listener right now need to fully grasp. As coaches, you know, we use these instruments and we have variations of instruments that combine to give us a really deep understanding of who we're working with. So when we are mentioning A, Bs, Cs, indexes, assessments, instruments will tell you. But you know, this is a really good reference point if you are interested in finding what those areas are, you know, for you.
And one last thing I want to add, if you want to take any of these profiles, we are just a phone call, text, email away. So please feel free to reach out and we can get you set up as soon as possible and get working with you guys. So the next several, if not few dozen definitions are going to relate to the action modes. So you've heard us talk about our numbers, our conative A profiles, right? 3-7-6-3, 3-3-10-3. Those all relate to a specific action mode. Quite frankly, there's just too much and not enough time to go through it all right now. So we will, at a very high level, go through all four action modes and then the, we'll call it, subsections of each mode. But I think, you know, to get started, right, the action mode or the definition of action modes are the four distinct clusters of behaviors that are able to be measured, which result from engaging our striving instincts. The four of them are fact finder, or the red line, follow through, which is the blue line, quick start, which is the green line, and implementer, which is the yellow line.
And so, like you just said, we don't want to overwhelm you with the definitions of what the subsequent scoring says about you. We're going to give very, very high level here in 2 minutes. And then we are going to do individual episodes and scenarios on each of these four action modes. So starting next week, you'll get an episode on, you know, conative fact finding, then follow through, then quick start and implementer. They will come through, you know, in the next several episodes. They might not be completely sequential, but fact finder is always going to be the first number or line that you see in your conative index. And by definition, it's the action mode that deals with detail and complexity, providing the perspective of experience. So when we're working with people, what we tell them is, your fact finder is an indicator of how much information or how much research you need in order to become confident or authoritative in the task at hand. When you take this index, you can score in one of three different areas for each of the four modes. You can be counteracting, accommodating, or initiating. Those are the three zones. So if you score in the counteraction of fact finder, then you would be termed a simplifier. Okay. So again, going back to the definition, how much information, how much research do I need to become confident? If you score in that counteract zone, you simplify.
So a simplifying fact finder would be constituted and quantified by numbers 1, 2, or 3. And words that are associated with a simplifying fact finder are distilling information, estimating, abbreviations, seeing the big picture, creating metaphors, condensing data, things like that. If you are an accommodating fact finder, so think numbers 4, 5, or 6, you're an explaining fact finder. Words associated with an explaining fact finder are paraphrasing reports, reviewing data, editing details, rewriting and fact-checking when necessary, test analogies, clarifying specific, so on and so forth. Finally, if you score in the 7, 8, 9, or 10 number on fact finder, you are a specifying fact finder, an initiating fact finder. Words associated with a specifying fact finder are researching in depth, defining objectives, assessing probabilities, defining the terms, developing complex strategies. So again, as I've mentioned, the further you go down this line, the closer you get to 10, it's the more authoritative and confident you feel with detail, data, information, facts, figures.
And some of you might be sitting there and saying to yourself, well, you know, which one am I? That's a pretty natural response to this. We don't want you to try and guess. And that's why we're going through these quickly. You can, you know, if you want to, you know, feel free. But we're going to take the time to dive into those three areas for each of the four zones. So that's the first, right? All of us have an instinctive way that we fact find, and that is one distinct action mode. The second distinct action mode is follow through. So follow through is an action mode that deals with structure and order. It's where, you know, focus and continuity is provided. And so when I'm defining follow through with anyone that we're coaching, I like to say, and CJ as an initiating follow through might, you know, agree or disagree with some of it, but my definition for follow through is how much system, direction, organization, and to what degree do we need to take ownership of systems, plans, organization, you know, is necessary for us to become not just confident in that, but in order for us to get things done.
An adapting follow through, or numbers 1, 2, 3, right? A counteracting follow through. Words associated with that would be adapting, shortcuts, revised approaches, interruptions, diversifying, flexibility, switching tasks frequently. That's Evan. That's so, the definition of Evan.
And again, when Carl is giving you these words associated for each of them, he's giving you what the traits that someone would score in that zone would associate with, right? So for me, I associate with interruptions, revising my approaches, flexibility, switching tasks. Those are the things that I do when I'm in cognitive sync. I like to adapt.
So moving forward here, right, the next zone in follow-through, right, the accommodating zone is a maintaining follow-through. So think numbers 4, 5, and 6. Again, words associated here are adjusting procedures, monitoring policies, realigning objectives, coordinating schedules, drafting guidelines, and maintaining order. Finally, closer we are to the bottom of the line here, right? A systematizing follow-through, an initiating follow-through.
Carl.
Me. Numbers 7, 8, 9, and 10. So words associated here are creating a plan, coordinating needs, distinguishing patterns, designing systems, bringing focus and closure to tasks, organizing materials and information.
It is quite literally the difference between people in an organization or people in a family or however you want to think about it, those who you can lean on to take the lead and design the systems and organize the playbook and keep things in check versus the people who you know like to live in chaos. You know, not that they, you know, chaos is a harsh term, but they like to keep things a little bit more flexible. They don't need that rigid system or organization in order to feel at ease.
Exactly. So finishing up follow through, moving on to the third action mode, which is quick start, which is, for any of you who know him, Mr. Evan Giokas.
Quick start is my life. It is a totally different action mode than any of the rest, because I do believe that regardless of whether you counteract, accommodate, or initiate with quick start, it's a very telling line to what your comfortability is in life. And by definition, quick start is the action mode that deals with risks and uncertainties. It's how we respond to life's unknowns. And in life, as you all know, we all do have to take risks at times. We do have to deal with uncertainties. We have to answer questions that we may not know what comes on the other side of that response. And quick start literally will measure for those situations and your instinctive comfortability within them. So if you are someone like me, we'll go from the initiate and work our way up here. So I am termed, or anybody who scores in that initiating 7, 8, 9, 10 zone, as innovative. So the words there are initiating changes, improvising solutions, experimenting to see what will happen, promoting different alternatives, generating slogans, defying the odds, and brainstorming possibilities. For an initiating quick start, life without innovation or decisions without innovation is very stale. And then working our way up into the accommodating zone, you have modifiers. Modifiers score in that 4 to 6 world, and they like to participate in experiments. They like to try out new ideas or sustain innovations, navigating through uncertainty. But they also like to reduce risks. They use metaphors and they adjust deadlines. So modifiers will want to either take a situation and stabilize it, which we'll get to in the definition in a second, or see it as an opportunity for innovation.
Well, not only do they like to, not only do they want to, but quite literally they need to.
Yeah.
So me, myself, CJ, I'm a 6 quick start. I'm a modifying quick start. So I have the need to do all those things that Evan just mentioned.
For sure. And then we have our stabilizers who, thank God, you know, there are people like this in the world because neither of us are them. Stabilizers, that would be the counteraction, numbers 1, 2, and 3, are people who prefer and intuitively need more stabilization in their lives. They like to protect their status quo. They like to create precedents in which they live. They will clarify deadlines. They will stick with what's working. It's not that these people will not take risks.
It's not that they can't do it.
Correct.
But in order to feel in sync, they need to spend a majority of their time stabilizing risk and uncertainty.
Quick start's the best.
Yeah, well, as a 10 quick start, I would see why you believe that.
I'm obviously just, you know, being stupid with it. But I truly do, not because of my number in it. I think that quick start is what makes Konative as unique as it does. All of the other zones, you know, whether you initiate in fact-finding, follow-through, quick start, or implementer, are they're all equally important. Quick start is no more important than fact-finder, or implementer, or follow-through. I just think that quick start is distinctly measured, which is not found on any other assessment that I've had experiences with.
Evan, here's a question for you, and I know we're getting off topic here, a little tangent. Would you say that quick start is the easiest to identify in somebody else? Not only the easiest, but the quickest to identify in somebody else?
No pun intended. I do, but I don't know that everybody would. Quick start to me, when you're meeting with somebody for the first time, it's very easy to step out of your initiating quick start or step out of your natural zone in quick start. It's very easy to say to somebody, I'm going all in. I can't tell you how many meetings I've had over the last 12, 13 years with people who have come and said, hey, you know, you've started businesses. I have this idea. And I'll be like, yeah, I'm in. And they'll be like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, I'm in. And like, because I know that if I'm meeting with another initiating quick start,
they'll do it too.
They're going to be, the next thing that I hear is not going to be from me. Right. It's going to be from them.
Right.
So it's almost like my test.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's the litmus test. Yeah. And so it comes back to if they're not, or if they're modifying or they're stabilizing and like they're 1 foot in or both feet out and just have an idea, well, then I won't hear from them again. Or, you know, oh, remember when we talked about that? I might do this. Yeah. Okay. So for me, it's easier to identify.
Love it.
But that's through experience.
And a lot of training and education, no doubt about it. So we'll finish up here with the fourth action mode, which is implementer.
Too widely ignored.
Very often ignored, I think.
Unfortunately, too, because so many people, implementer is...
It's like the lost stepchild type of thing. The black swan.
Well, unless you're an initiator.
100%.
Because I think that this is... So let me give you the definition, well, and then we'll talk
quick,
about it.
You say unless you're an initiating implementer, we don't have many initiating implementers in our lives. Your wife is close.
Yeah.
But still not initiating.
For sure.
I have quite literally nobody in my life that I've profiled who is an initiating implementer.
Yeah. Implementer, by definition, is the action mode that deals with tangible or intangible tasks, roles, responsibilities. It deals with the physical space and your ability to operate manually and provide durability, a sense of the tangible. So what that means in layman's terms is it's the measure of how much or how little you need different physical spaces or tangible tasks in order to create sync in your life. So the longer your line, the more you instinctively need physical work in your life.
So that's a perfect segment because we'll start with the initiating sub facet, right, of implementer, which is a demonstrating implementer. So again, think numbers 7 to 10. Words associated with demonstrate are produce quality solutions, maximize the use of space, handling transportation and packaging, installing mechanical devices, building handcrafted models. Again, this is working in the physical. Moving up, right? Our accommodating zone is restore. So this is, think again, numbers 4, 5, or 6. And words associated with restore are relocate and refurbish, renovating structures, testing ingredients, converting space, removing obstacles, both real and imagined. And then finally, if you're a counteracting implementer, that is marked by the term envision. So if your numbers are 1, 2, or 3, which Evan and I both are 3s, words associated here are creating virtual presentations, envisioning circumstances, finding intangible methods. This one I'm going to say, and my mom, who I know is listening, is going to laugh at, is jerry-rigging fixes. My wife will also laugh at that because that is absolutely me. Simulating actual events, so on and so forth. So again, implementer, as Evan mentioned, is somebody's need to be in the physical or the intangible.
I think, again, we talked about implementer being too often ignored. Implementer, it's not that it's ignored. Implementer is not something that, unless you are the parent of a child or the teacher of a student or the boss of an employee, that you see demonstration of distraction or demonstration of a need that you would pay attention to, right? I just like can't wait to dive into episodes on these, and I know that I'm going long with this definition, but I love the implementer, and that's why we pay careful attention to it, especially if someone scores out of that 1, 2, 3 zone. Because if you do, right, and this is kind of a preface to that episode, if you score in the 1 to 3 zone, you find yourself, like us, working, you know, in an office, getting really creative with your ideas. As long as the rest of your zones are in sync the majority of the time, you're not going to burn out on being there. But how about the person who isn't that? That they're sitting in that meeting and they're collecting their paycheck and like they're just itching to go outside, or they're itching to go
build.
Exactly. And they just want to be part of that process. How many of you out there are accommodating or, you know, initiating implementers that have lived your entire life suppressing that for a paycheck?
Well, and I think that's a massive point here, E, because it does not mean that if you're an initiating or even accommodating to an extent implementer, you can't be, you know, we'll call it, I'm doing air quotes here, a white collar employee or a desk employee, right? There are absolutely ways to work within your role, work within your responsibilities, your key tasks as an implementing or as an initiating implementer, and still work, you know, in an office setting. Not so much.
For sure.
You don't have to be in a typical physical, you know, career.
So just to kind of blend a couple things, I think implementer does that so well. You can be a counteracting implementer, someone who intuitively needs more of that imaginative brainstorming creative, but want to spend your free time golfing.
That's us.
Physical tasks.
That's us.
Because you're a spectrum. Everybody is a spectrum, and all four of these zones are spectrums that we find ourselves in. You could be in all 12 of those areas in the course of one day. There is no living in perfect sync. Nobody lives in sync 100% of the time. If we're lucky, we can spend 70% of the time there. I've said that before. So you are going to be in those zones. And quite candidly, there are a lot of times, even though golf is my only hobby, as Anthony would say, like that golf puts me in complete strain.
Right.
Golf will put me in strain if everything isn't in perfect alignment at the office, at home, and within my crazy brain. If that's not there, golf puts me in strain. But it's also my favorite and probably my only hobby worth mentioning.
Well, it's funny too, and again, here we are getting on a little tangent, but even think about you and I when we play and we're on the putting green,
yeah,
right? Like I've got my process. I got, you know, mark the ball, go behind it, read the putt, go behind the hole, read the putt, yep. understand the speed, this, that, and the other. You, on the other hand, are quite literally the opposite, where if you're putting your best, if you're playing your best, you may ask, hey, Siege, what's the read on this putt? And the moment I go to open my mouth to actually tell you, you just go, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'll make it.
I'll make it. I don't need it.
I mean.
But that's what you need. I putted
unbelievable last weekend.
Yeah, well, we don't have to bring that up because I did not.
Yeah.
Well, again, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. This was the ABCs of MGM. We will have all the definitions in the show notes. But again, this was built, this was created for you, the listeners, because of the feedback that we received from you all. So please don't stop sending in, you know, your feedback, your critiques, your compliments, your desires, your wants, whatever the case may be. We welcome it all, and we hope you learned a little something today.
I think they did.
Perfect.
Hit them with the outro.
Hit them with the outro.